temporarily excluded for discussion of any in-committee items. I will remind members of their obligations under the Councillor's Code of Conduct to declare any financial... outstating the item of business it relates to. Having declared an interest, members should leave the chamber for the duration of the discussion on that item and should not take part in the vote. They'll then be invited back to join the meeting once the discussion on the item has ended. Proceedings of the meeting will be audio and video recorded except where Council is considering any exempt items. The recording equipment is linked to the microphone system on the computer, so please ensure your microphone is switched on before speaking. Members are reminded that they are personally responsible for any comments they make at the meeting. Have any apologies for the meeting of Councillor Campbell? Any others? No, all good to go. Move on to item number two. Any declarations of interest?
Chair, in relation to the action sheet and on the ERT referenced 025, I'm actually on the steering committee, overall steering committee of SEUPB, and also on one of the committees that's overseeing the programme, but I need to declare an interest in.
Okay, right.
I've not a question, but I'll bring it up when it comes around. I need to leave at this stage when you're going through the action sheet for the mentions SEUPB.
Okay, that's up to the member to determine whether they're conflicted or not.
Well, I just want to make and then
I'll leave. On which item on the action sheet?
That's on the action sheet.
It's
about the Ballykilner Hut.
Well, we'll be gone from that item by the time you come back in. Do you want to raise that now, Charlie?
I'll raise it now, and then I'll walk
Go ahead. Yeah.
Just like to ask, is there any update in regarding the Ballykilner Hut situation that it did raise at a previous meeting? And the Ulster Folk Museum Cultural, were they approached or consulted about taking the hut on?
I think that's a process that's ongoing, Terry, following the council meeting, and that's where it is. There'll be a paper coming back to an ERT meeting in the future.
That's okay. Well, I just walked down the end.
I'll give you a shout about 7. Yeah, nobody else anything on the action sheet then? Move on to item number 4, which is our presentation on co-ownership. And we've Mark Graham in attendance who kind of present us. Oh, sorry, a proposal and a seconder for the action sheet. Thanks, Chair. Go ahead.
I didn't realise that we'd gone on to item 3. I thought Councillor Andrews had spoke during item 2. And
no, he was speaking on item 3. Item are you going back to?
Sorry?
What item are you looking to speak on?
Tourism then? Strategy.
On
action
number 3?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
So just to say that when I spoke to the tourism strategy at the last ERT, I said that unless council and councillors recognise stressors on the environment before pushing people into unsuitable areas, the same events would happen and the same councillors would be standing wringing their hands. Now I'm one of them, but I don't intend to just wring my hands. Over the weekend, we had a fire in the Mourns near Hilltown and the absolute chaos, which is the Bloody Bridge, ensued. This was one sunny weekend. Bollards were removed, rubbish, one-time use barbecue, cars parked.
What has this got to do with the actual tourism strategy?
I do not understand why there is
not. Sorry, I'm speaking to you, I'm chair of the meeting. What has it got to do with the tourism strategy?
I would like for some sort of recognition within it to show more protection and preservation of the area, because I spoke to this the last time as a stressor.
Already approved the tourism strategy from the last meeting.
Okay, well, I just wanted to comment that it's taken one sunny weekend so far. We haven't even started. Thank you.
We'll go back into item 4, which is Mark. And if you'd like to introduce your colleague as well with you.
Hi, good evening, everybody. My name is Mark Graham. I'm the Chief Executive of Co-ownership, and this is my colleague, Charlie O'Neill, who's the Director of Product Development. And thanks for the opportunity to I'm here to talk about co-ownership and what we do. So I have a few slides to talk through, and I think one's nearly ready to go. There we go. So I'm going to talk roughly about three things, really just an introduction around where co-ownership sits in terms of the context of the wider housing challenges or crisis we face here. A bit about what we in Cornership do and who we help, and the role of Cornership in local development plans. So I suppose my purpose is to inform the council a bit more of what we do, and I guess to ask you to spread the word about who we can help and how we might help further, but also to talk about that emerging role that we're going to play in local development plans as the new planning policies get adopted. We operate with lots of housing challenges in Northern Ireland. You know, we have an outrageous number of people who are homeless. We have a huge number of people who are living in housing stress and unable to get homes. But in Cornership, we see a different type of housing need. We see a group of people that are in low to moderate incomes, a permanent job, who in my generation would have expected to be able to own their own home fairly readily, but who are now finding themselves really with very poor housing options. Their only really other housing option, if they can't afford to buy their own home, is the private rental sector. And what our customers keep telling us is that the private rental sector doesn't suit their needs. It's expensive, it's insecure, and it doesn't give them the agency in their lives to live it as they want to. We have seen a huge generational shift. Yep. Today, compared to my generation, if you want to own your own home, you're going to, on average, need a much higher income. You're going to be older, and you're going to be able to save for a deposit. And most importantly, unless you get financial help from your family, most young people these days in moderate incomes will actually struggle to buy their own home. And as I said, if you're in that situation, your housing options are very limited. For you, private rental sector may not be a transitional arrangement. It may be somewhere you end up actually bringing up a family or indeed growing old. We did a survey a while ago. We asked our customers what impact that Cornership had. And we have lots of facts and figures. But I often think the actual quotations on the slide actually sum it up better. So 83% of respondents agreed, or strongly agreed, their health and well-being was improved. But as you can see from those comments, having a stable, secure, affordable home, you know, makes a life-changing difference to people. And I think that would apply to any type of, you know, apply to social housing as much to home ownership. So what do people want? What do our customers want? They want the home to be affordable. They want somewhere they can stay as long as they want, and they want decent quality and worthy of agency to use the home as they wish. And in many respects, the private rental sector, as it's currently constituted, doesn't actually deliver that for them. Just very quickly about us. We're a housing association, but we're unique. We only do short ownership. Formed in 1978. We're funded regularly by the partner communities. And we've helped over 33,000 people since then into home ownership. We currently have 10,000 co-owners, and we represent about 7% of the first-time buyer market in Northern Ireland. We do three things. We do a product called Co-Own. We have one for 55s, and we have a product which is about renting and then owning later. The vast majority of what we do is actually that first one, and I'll spend a bit of time talking about it. So last year, we had 755 customers join us, and we have 448 people that actually bought out. So basically, most people will buy out their property once they can afford to, so over 90% will do. We buy a range of property prices, but as you can see, we don't buy over 195. The average price is just under 150, which is a wee bit lower than the average price here. And 20% were new built. That 20%, 21% of new builds actually significantly lower than it would have been in previous years. We're not building as many first-time buyer homes, and they tend to be more expensive than they were in the past. We help people that with their affordability and who have too small or no deposit. If you'd asked me before interest rates shot up, I would have said the biggest problem was actually the deposit problem. Now it's both. Yeah, people are struggling with higher interest rates and saving for a deposit. 91% are first-time buyers. Some people do return to home ownership. Half of them come through the rental sector. And the way it works is you need to be able to mortgage. You have to get a mortgage roughly for half the house. the journey, people apply to us, we assess their affordability. So we make sure they can actually afford co-ownership. But if they can afford it themselves, we will tell them to go and get a mortgage themselves. And they take between 50 and 90% share. We give them a 99-year lease, and then they pay rent of 2.5%. It's designed so that it's always cheaper to come through co-ownership than to get a full mortgage. And in recent years, it's always been much cheaper than private rented as well. And then people can buy out in chunks of 5%. In truth, most people buy out all at once. And in recent years, about 50% of people will buy out within 10 years. So some people do buy out quite quickly. We have a new thing called Home for 55s. So this is essentially people who want to find someone more suitable to live as they get older. It's to deal with the fact we have an ageing population and many people are living in homes that are too old, difficult to maintain, and energy inefficient or too big for their needs. For the sake of time, I'll not go through Angela's story, but essentially it's for people that have equity in their home and can, and with a bit of help from us, can actually buy a home somewhere else. So a typical person may have a property they own outright, but to buy, let's say, a one-bed or two-bed apartment would cost them more than they have. We make up the difference. We also have people like David, who is interesting, people who probably used to own their own home, don't any longer, usually relationship breakups, ill health, that sort of thing. They have some savings, but it's not enough. If they have enough savings, they can put down that and we will make up the difference. And we've probably had more Davids than we expected. There's quite a lot of people living in the private rental sector who are older who are looking for a more stable and affordable route. It works roughly the same as the co-owned product, so people take a 50-90% share. They typically don't have a mortgage. They bring equity from the home or they bring cash from the deposit. We don't expect those customers to buy out. It's still a relatively new product. How many? 23. Yeah, so it's obviously much smaller. It's been operating really for less than 2 years, so it's still early days for them. We also do something else called Rent the Home. This is for people who can't get a mortgage at all. And it's usually people who have a credit issue or people that have a job, for example, self-employed people who don't have sufficient years accounts. It allows them to rent a home from us and then they can buy the property out after a year, between 1 and 3 years. We have just over 84 people have been through Rent the Home, so again, it is quite small. But for those people, it does help. It makes a huge difference to their lives. Provided some figures by council areas. Those are from last year. Proportionally, they don't change hugely year on year. You will see we have certain hotspots. And the new build figures, as I said, decreased. And they are a reflection of there's not many places in Northern Ireland where affordable first-time buyer homes are actually being built in any quality. Local development plans and housing. So what's up on the slide there is actually the planning policy from Belfast, but all the planning policies that are coming out now are roughly the same, which is basically planning permission granted for residential development. Some element of affordable housing needs to be delivered. So we've been working with councils, particularly Belfast, because they were first in terms of how our product would actually fit within that. But I expect most of the affordable housing in most places will be social, but I do think there's also a role for the type of product that we provide. It can all get a bit technical, I think one of the purposes we've been out and about is explaining where we fit within this. So the Department for Communities have defined what affordable housing is so that it can be used by planning officials. And essentially, it's either social housing or intermediate housing.
And as you can see from that breakdown, we actually fit within the intermediate housing. It's up to the housing executive to determine for planning applications how many social, how many intermediate should be delivered. And for developers, obviously, there's going to be a viability consideration as well. So the way we have approached this, and we've talked to various people, including the Department of Communities and various councils about this, is how we would interact with it. Be the housing executive will determine the need for social and intermediate homes. A developer would then engage with co-ownership. The developer will market how many homes we agree as being available exclusively through co-ownership for a great period of time. The great period of time will probably depend on the development and will probably depend on the size of it and so on. We would expect in most cases all the homes will be sold through co-ownership, through co-ownership customers, but if they're not, then the developer would revert back to the council to determine what other provisions should be made for affordable housing in those locations. So that was a very quick run through what we do in co-ownership. And I guess, you know, obviously very happy to take questions or thoughts. As I said at the beginning, our main purpose of doing this is to start that conversation about local development plans and where co-ownership might fit within it, but also to make sure as many people as possible are aware that we're here and we support anybody across Northern Ireland to buy properties of any type as long as they're under £195,000. And so happy to take questions or thoughts.
Yeah, Mark, thank you. Any councillor wish to make comment? Okay, late. Hey, Charles. Go ahead.
Thank you, Maggie. Thank you very much for your presentation. I suppose it goes without saying the lack of availability becomes a more acute problem the more expensive the area.
Yes.
So, particularly south down along the coastal areas, same old story, because the housing associations cannot afford to build on brownfield sites there either because they have a finite budget. So, I guess straight to the question, £195,000 is capped at. Now, a lot of places in the north that'll buy a quality three-bed house, but you're sticking off on the ground on that for this is not 5 minutes from here.
Yep.
How do you propose to deal with that going forward? Because that trajectory, I'm certain, is only going to continue to go up.
The £195,000 is reviewed periodically by the Department of Communities. And as you say, it's designed to ensure you can get a home anywhere in Northern Ireland of a reasonable size. But I inevitably, there are places where that's not possible. So within this council area, we do provide properties right across the council area. But you're right in saying we buy probably more just at Dunpatrick or Ballinahinch than we would in the more expensive tourist areas. I don't have an easy solution to that, but the local development plans may help, because if somebody's developing new build properties in a more expensive area, they will have to deliver a certain element of those as being affordable, which means that they will have to provide some elements in that area, you know, not for the holiday market, but for residents. But I'm also not sure that's going to make a huge difference in truth. But, you know, from our point of view and from government's point of view, our job is to help as many people as possible within the existing funding spread across Northern Ireland. I guess there will always be some hotspots. But the 195 will continue to be, we have seen pressures right across Northern Ireland in terms of new build. New build prices have gone up significantly more than the market has.
Yes, thanks, Charles. Thanks for Bowsy.
Hi, thanks for the presentation. Particularly interested in the 55s. Co-owned scheme. I think it's quite a good scheme. So I think that it's a pity that the co-ownership scheme will only help people move to new houses rather than help them with their existing house. I approached co-ownership last year about a case in my DA where a couple had been, a couple in their 70s, got divorced and the home needed to be divided 50-50. And the man wanted to stay and the woman was happy to sell her share for him if he could afford it, but obviously he couldn't. And I think that would have been a great way for the co-ownership scheme to buy 50% of the house and to allow a pensioner to remain in a house that they've lived in for most of their lives. So maybe that's an aspect of the scheme that can maybe be developed. Thanks.
Yeah, I mean, I'll actually find out what that case was. But, Tony, have you got any thoughts about
it? Yeah, it's something that we can look at to see as the product can be developed in a way to cater for circumstances just like that.
Thanks, Councillor Rousey. Councillor Clark.
Thanks, Chair. And thanks for the presentation, Morgan, Charlie. Just a couple of points in regards to the buyout, you know, of the person who's in co-ownership with you. Is it the original contribution that was made at the start of the purchase, or is it at market value on every...
Yeah, it's the market value at the time. So what would happen, somebody would ask for a valuation to be done with the property.
Yeah.
And then they let's say they were buying the other 50%, then they would need to find almost certainly a mortgage for the other 50%.
Yeah. So, is there conveyancing fees every time you...
There would be a valuation fee.
Right, shared between the two.
Well, it is basically, we subsidise the fee,
yeah,
put it that way. And then it really depends if the, you know, so if the person's going to sell the house, which is quite common, yes, then they would need to, they would have legal fees for conveyancing. Yeah.
Right. Our council area, going through your figures, is particularly low. Is there a reason for that that you've found? Is it land availability? Is it nature?
This is somewhat speculation, but I think it's probably two things. It tends to be related to the amount of transactions in the area. So areas with higher levels of housing transactions, we will do more business. But I think also in this particular council area, it's reflective of higher property prices in some places. But one of the reasons, I guess, we wanted to come and speak to councils is we want to make sure it's not a lack of awareness. So we're starting our advertising campaign shortly. You know, we'll be doing digital TV and billboards. But a lot of the stuff also comes from word of mouth and people knowing people that have done it. So we're very happy to come and talk to whoever you think you'd like to talk to about spreading the word. I don't know, Charlie, is any of this touching area particularly?
No, it's just that we have been attending a range of events and things like that and shopping centres and opportunities just to speak to people about what we do and how they could avail of us. And we're happy for anything that you might suggest that's happening in the area to come and talk to.
I mean, I guess it's always customer choice. So our customers come to us, but we're very keen we help a proportion of people right across Northern Ireland, regardless of where they live.
If there was a landowner, you know, had the availability for, you know, a small number of homes, what's the sort of process? I know from your slides there, you said the housing executive have a role. What triggers that? Or, you know,
I'm not sure what your planning policies are on that, but it would normally be triggered by a particular size. Most of the private house builders that build first-time buyer homes do know about us.
Yes.
You know, so we would not frequently jointly market with them. You know, from their point of view, we bring extra demand. You know, they're more likely to sell the house if they work with us. How the local development plans play out in this council, I'm not sure, but it will be that they would have, you know, they would. I think most local house builders would want to do some work with co-ownership on this because, again, if it brings more demand, you know, it brings more certainty they can sell the house. But if there are any local builders that want to speak to us, it gives a ring.
Just speak direct.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Excellent. Councillor Truesdale.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for your presentation. It's very interesting. The house next door to our home was a holiday home, and the guy wanted to sell it. He was from Dublin, and wouldn't sell. It was nothing to do with the neighbours, but it just wouldn't sell. It's a three-storey house, so it's quite a difficult sell if you have young children. And he approached co-ownership, and a lovely family moved in, and it really was life-changing to them. So it was a fantastic scheme, which I was unaware of. This was about 5 years ago. So it made it was a life-changing difference for that wee family. Could I just ask, did you say co-ownership applies to people in employment? So both have to be in employment?
No, not necessarily. The essence of it is they need to be able to get a mortgage. So basically, you either have to be in full-time, at least probably one person needs to be in full-time employment, or you'll be self-employed people who apply to us, but they would need funds. So how it works is people apply to us, we do an affordability assessment, and then we check people's credit history. We would then make them basically approve them. And we're reasonably certain if we approve them that they will be able to get a mortgage. So if we approve them, they go and find a home, bring it back to us, we decide it's okay, get the valuation done. And then they would get a mortgage. So that's the process. So we would have single people who would join co-ownership. We have with families, with single parents, we have couples. So it's a whole range. I guess these days it's much easier to afford it if you've two incomes coming in. But the key factor for us is there's no point us approving somebody if they can't get a mortgage. So what we do is very aligned with what a mortgage lender will assess.
I'm really just thinking of the amount of short-term repeat contracts that people are on, or zero-hours contracts people are on, but then I guess that would be up to the mortgage company to make that decision, whether or not they can get a mortgage based on their past employment history.
Yeah, Charlie's probably know more about that.
Yeah, we look at things like that. If people are on short-term contracts or zero-hours contract, we'll look at each case individually to check what people's circumstances are in relation to the affordability assessment on it.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Councillor Truesdale. We move on. Thanks, gentlemen, for your presentation. So we move on to item 5, which is the cross-border teaching registration. This was from a notice of motion taken by Killian. Yeah. So Aveen's just going to give a brief summary of it, and there's a recommendation with it there. Killian, do you want to come in there?
Yeah, happy to. Thanks very much to the officers for putting the paper together, and I think it's great to see some of the steps that are outlined in it. I think particularly with DVEC's emphasis on skills, there's a clear synergy there. One of the things I just wanted to raise with respect to the paper was, is it possible to have an inclusion in there in the recommendations of the actions for engagement with as per the motion with Louth and Monaghan County Councils? And the only reason I reference that again is because previous engagement that I've had with the Shared Island Unit has taught me that joint bids from councils on both sides of the border for policy changes, etc., carry a bit more weight and go a bit further if they have that north-south support. And then very briefly, just on the motion, the reason I was bringing it forward is just because a lot of feedback that I have been getting from young teaching graduates was two things. First of all, how difficult it was to get a permanent teaching post in the north, and then how difficult it is to get through the registration process in the south, because northern graduates are treated the same as rest of world graduates in that there's sort of extensive lists of documentation that they have to provide and so on and so forth. Whereas if you're a graduate in the south, all you need is your graduation certificate and a character reference. So I suppose the aim of the motion in essence is to try and harmonise those processes north and south, so that if there's a teaching graduate in Newry or Warm Point or South Armagh looking to get a post in Dundalk or Cross or Dundalk or Carrickmacross or Castleblaney or something like that, that it's easy for them to do, and then they're not forced up the north coast or the northwest or something like that. So specific ask for me just in the paper, and as I say, thank you for it, is just to pursue that engagement with councils south of the border to strengthen any ultimate bid to the Shared Island unit or a body like it. Thank you, Chair.
Just want to incorporate that into it then. Thanks, Maria.
Yeah, yeah.
You want to propose that?
Yeah.
Proposed.
Okay. Yep.
Will be a seconder?
Will be a seconder.
Terry Anders, yeah. Nobody else then wishing to speak? Do you want to speak on it even, or are you happy enough just to follow up on that?
It's just the recommendation with DBEC, and then there's also a paper on about DBEC.
Thanks for Tuesday.
Thank you, Chair. It's okay to go?
Yeah,
there's already a fairly simple three-step process. In the Republic's process, you apply, you're assessed, and your registration, but it's the barriers that aren't simple. Even to people born in the Republic, it's not simple. So all applicants have the condition of the Irish language requirement applied to the registration. Post-primary applicants will have the condition of history, structure of Irish education system applied to the registration. Schools under the Catholic patronage require a Catholic teaching certificate, and it was the same here. And encouragingly, the Irish National Teachers Union recently voted overwhelmingly to remove this requirement, but it is still here. In the Republic Church of Ireland, schools seek a separate certificate in ethical and multi-denominational education for teachers interested in teaching in multi-denominational schools. So are those the specific obstacles as you see it? Because surely this would have to go right across the Republic, not just Lisa Monaghan. And these barriers have been here for decades. So I can't see what, say, the Labour Partnership or the Dublin-Belfast Economic Corridor can do to relax any of those conditions. And in addition, the Irish Government Department for Education are in the process of working out ways to retain and recruit Irish teachers from the Republic who are being enticed to Australia and the Middle East. So I'm interested in what you hope the review will contain without asking for more favourable terms given over to teachers in the North. Thank you, Chair.
Either you're for or against the motion before us. So the next thing, are you finished then, Councillor Tuesday?
He can't answer any of the questions?
Well, it's not a conversation between you and another councillor. It's a conversation with the Minister and the rest of the committee.
Okay.
So you've made your point. Your point's been made.
Right.
So you'll have your opportunity to vote for or against the motion.
Okay.
Councillor Quinn.
Yeah, I just want to comment.
You're on anyway.
I don't know what way this works. No, it's a great motion, and I also understand that it's a language necessity, not specifically Irish. If you want to teach in the South, I think you need to have a GCSE in a language to be able to go forward, not specifically Irish. And if it's an EU member state, it's not Irish specifically. But no, I just want to get a comment on the fact that it's a great motion. The Sagiri students are graduating today, so it's a great access for them, and I have plenty of friends who are teachers themselves and are graduating, and it's already difficult, and we don't want to lose people to Australia, so I'm happy to support.
Thank you, Councillor. Okay, is everybody in agreement with the motion before us? I think that is a yes.
No.
No? Okay. Want to show of hands then? Those for the motion? And those against? And those abstaining? Okay, motion passed. Killian, do you want to sum up briefly?
Look, I don't feel the need really specifically in the Councillor Truesdale's points, because the points that she's made are in contradiction with the guidance of the Teaching Council in the Republic, so I'm going to lean on the Teaching Council's guidance rather than Councillor Truesdale's. I do find it bewildering, though, that the only vote in the Chamber against the harmonisation of teaching registration processes and the amplification of employment opportunities for graduate teachers in this district is coming from the Alliance Party, but I am grateful to other councillors for their support, and I'm glad to see the motion pass. Thank you.
Thanks, Councillor. Okay, we move on to item number 6, which is Dublin-Belfast Economic Corridor. And Conor, you want to take us through this?
Yeah, thanks, Chair. And the report in front of you is to note the update on the progress of works by the Dublin-Belfast Economic Corridor Partnership, and just to approve the Council continues in the administrative lead for the procurement of the services that have been identified by the partnership. I think there's been significant work, which is outlined in the report, by the DBEC partnership over the last year in three key areas of sustainability and innovation-led growth, skills development and engagement and brand development. So the recommendation in 3.1 sets out what members are asked to propose and second tonight. So we can have a proposer and a seconder, and I'm happy to take any questions.
You're proposing, Councillor Payne? Yeah, there'll be a seconder for that item. Brilliant, thank you.
Everybody in agreement?
Yeah, okay. The item 7 is just for noting. Can I have a proposer and a seconder for that item, please?
So proposed.
Councillor Gilbreath and Councillor Andrews. Okay, and then we move on to our into item in committee. So we could have a proposer and a seconder to go into committee. Councillor Bowsey, seconded. Councillor Andrews. Items 8 and 9 are deemed to be exempt under paragraph 3 of Part 1 of Schedule 6 of the Local Government Act. Information relating to the financial or business affairs of any particular person, including the council holding that information, and the public may, by resolution, be excluded during these items of business. Good to go. Whilst in committee, the following items were agreed. Item 8, AOMB and Geopark SLAs, and the proposal of Councillor Quinn, seconded by Councillor Fain, was agreed to approve funding letters of offer through SLAs for the delivery of series of projects as contained in the officer's report. Item 9, Labour Market Partnership Review of 23-24 Action Plan, and the proposal of Councillor Andrews, seconded by Councillor Cairns, was agreed to note the outputs of the NMD LMP for 23-24. No. Okay, councillors, thank you. That's the meeting finished.